Happy September! This is Jan Brett and this is my September Hedgegram. It's September, a month in my year of working as a children's book illustrator and writer that puts me right in the middle of my yearly creative project. Every month in my Hedgegram, I stop and gather my thoughts about my work for anybody who is interested. Even though I have written and illustrated 30 children's books, I still have lots of hurdles, challenges, and uninspired periods. Luckily, they are outnumbered by the exhilaration of creating a new story and the falling down the rabbit hole feeling of being taken up with a new set of images, color palette, and design. Sometimes I feel like an armchair adventurer when I get immersed in a book setting. I was very, very fortunate to be able to travel to India several years ago, specifically to correct background material for this book, The Tale of the Tiger Slippers. Strangely, the illustrations will rely on two very separate sources, and sources that are both new to me. The first is the flora and fauna of India. Before my trip, I had envisioned India as a jungle-like setting, and the descriptions from Kipling's works, The Jungle Book, Kim, Rikki Tikki Tavi, the Just So stories, and his many other short stories. Revisiting his work, I'm heartbroken that some of his language and descriptions about culture reflect an unacceptable attitude about India. Kipling was a master storyteller, and his work made up a good part of my beloved childhood reading, and revisiting Kipling's world is bittersweet. When we traveled to India, we landed in Mumbai, spent the night, and then set off by plane to central Madhya Pradesh, where we visited three large national parks, Panna, Bandhavgarh, and Kanha, where they each had a tiger population, but no guarantees that we would actually see a tiger. My husband and I arranged to have our bird guide we met in Africa come with us, Martin Bonatti. Martin guided us on four birding trips in Africa, and we knew it would enhance our experience. The guides in the Indian parks were great as well, and we loved being in a small group so we could stop and explore if we saw something interesting that others might not be so crazy about. I was really eager to see a variety of birds and animals to use as minor characters in my book. At the first park, we didn't see a tiger, but after 3 days in the second park, we got very close to a huge, resplendent male. We were in an open jeep, and the tiger sauntered along the dirt road and wowed us with his claw sharpening and scenting on a tree. Here is where I would like to say how different I found the landscape than my Kipling images. This part of India is on a high, thickly wooded plateau that has been kept pristine for hundreds of years for royal hunting parties. There were lots of rocky outcroppings, ravines, streams, and fields in the mostly deciduous forest. Now the areas are designated national parks that are strictly patrolled. In the mornings, it was icy cold, requiring sweatshirts, scarves, and mittens. Besides the tiger, the scenarios that I remember intently were seeing flocks, perhaps 20 or more, of stag peafowl moving through the fields, from a distance, their long tails looking like weird black sticks behind them. Also, coming across an elephant with its armed mahout, or partner, in the forest. The mahout was guiding the elephant with very energetic kicks with his feet from his vantage point on top of the elephant. He was part of the guard force against poachers, as well as recording the tiger population. I don't really know what prevented the tigers from wandering out of the park and eating the cattle that were everywhere in the surrounding countryside. I do know that every tiger in the park is known by their unique facial markings. I have to keep this in mind when I illustrate the four tiger characters in my book. I also, with the help of Martin, kept track of every bird sighting so I could cross-reference the species in my many bird books when I got home. I plan to show birds in the illustrations' backgrounds after being inspired by the Mughal court art in the 1500s, 1600s, and 1700s. The Persian and Indian miniatures of that time were hallmarked by the exquisite birds, animals, and plants in their backgrounds. The other memorable mammal sightings was on one of my runs near our hotel. Sitting in a sunspot was a beautiful wildcat. It was too dignified to move away, so I stopped and stared at it for a long time. When I got back to the hotel, one of the hotel employees said there had been a leopard on the hotel grounds. I would not have stopped to see the leopard. That would have never happened in Africa, where we tourists were always being appraised of potentially dangerous wildlife. The two very separate ways of collecting background knowledge for my book were our trip and my nice collection of art books about Mughal court art. The scenes in the exquisite and detailed albums and miniatures were commissioned and influenced from a series of culturally minded emperors that lived in the 1500s until the early 1800s. The scholars and art historians that annotate my art books have given me many exciting ideas about creating my book. For example, body language. If a person is making an utterance, the artist wants to show this. The figure touches his thumb to his first finger. In another example, if a figure is amazed as if seeing an extraordinary event, he could be biting a finger as if testing if he is dreaming. There is one gesture I'm not clear on. When a figure, usually a prince, is pictured about to enjoy worldly pleasures, he holds a sprig of a flower, never a bouquet, and is pictured smelling its fragrance. Does that show he's very sensitive or something else? When characters are hunting, they wear an earthy green. If a beautiful blue, in those days made by lapis lazuli pigment, which is costly, the figure is often an important one. Certain trees are symbolic. My favorite is one with many colored leaves that I did not knowingly see on my trip. This will require some digging on my part. You can see how one piece of information leads to another and why I feel like I'm falling down the rabbit hole like Alice's. Currently, I'm painting every chance I can get in many European cities because I am on a trip with the Boston Symphony Orchestra in which my husband Joe plays the double bass. The concerts in Europe's great halls are outstanding and, well, for lack of a better word, mind-blowing. Mahler's Third Symphony with mezzo-soprano Susan Graham and Shostakovich's Symphony No. 4 are two of the masterpieces they are playing. On the long bus rides and plane trips, besides worrying about my chickens back home, I am working on next year's book about a musk ox named Cozy, which is set in Alaska and will be a good reason to plan a research trip to the musk ox farm near Anchorage. Since I am a sometime knitter, I think there will be a Kvyat musk ox wool sweater in the making in my future as well. A new rabbit hole. Happy creating, your friend and fellow book lover, Jamp.